It looks like we might not be in Kansas anymore, my friends. But we sure have arrived at Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. Hey there! Welcome to another episode of this here electronic engineering podcast, hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. This week, big data, big analytics, and how not to find yourself at the bottom of a mountain of information is the name of the game. My guest is Dr. David Fried from Coventor, and we've got our carabiners, quick draws, and belay devices all ready for our ascension up to the summit of Mount St. Data. So, there's no time like the present. Let's get climbing. My guest today is Dr. David Fried from Coventor. Thank you so much for joining me, David.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed talking to you last year at DAC, and I'm excited to do it again.
So give my audience a quick recap on what Coventor is all about.
We provide software tools, both in the semiconductor and the MEMS market, to help develop advanced technologies and get products to market faster by eliminating a lot of the trial and error experimentation that happens in the fab.
Okay, so big analytics. Let's talk about that, specifically in the semiconductor industry. How do you see big analytics changing the course of the semi industry?
I think we're at a time in the semiconductor industry where processes have gotten incredibly complicated. Integrated process flows are hundreds of steps. The equipment that performs those process operations have become incredibly advanced, and an amazing amount of data is being generated in the fab for every single wafer that goes through the fab. For years, we've been collecting that data in the fab, and now the analysis of that data is really starting to mature. This is mountains and mountains of data. If you think about the number of wafers going through the fab, the number of process steps, the number of sensors on those process equipment. So it's huge, huge amounts of data. And now that we're starting to be able to analyze all that data and really control manufacturing through deep understanding of that huge mountain of data we've been collecting for years. For us, on the virtual fabrication side, it's really similar. A lot of our users have graduated or matured. Instead of running one process on one design and investigating one model, they're running hundreds or thousands or even millions of variants, process variations or design changes, and they're producing mountains and mountains of virtual fabrication data. So at the same time as the fabs are developing their analysis capabilities to drive manufacturing through their data, our virtual fabrication customers, users, partners are developing their analytic techniques to develop these technologies better in virtual fabrication.
Okay, so speaking of big analytics, you guys just launched Simulator 3D 6.1, has some pretty unique data analytic capabilities. So tell me more about that.
Okay, so yeah, as I was saying, our users are generating these mountains of data. Often they are burying themselves in their own data.
Right.
I think it happens in a lot of industries now. So we are releasing Simulator 3D Analytics, which is a new module or new layer in our virtual fabrication platform, and it automates, standardizes, and analyzes these big parallel experiments. It really guides the user through the correct way to create an experiment, big or small experiment, execute it in the most efficient way, but then also provides a lot of statistical insight and analysis on the back end for those results so you can drive real technology development value from doing these big process variation experiments that most of our users are moving into.
Cool. So I think process modeling is going to be one of the big linchpins and innovation in the semiconductor industry. Do you agree? And how do you see process modeling playing a part in the semi industry going forward?
Okay, so obviously, I agree. I work for a process modeling company. But I really think the last couple of years have been super exciting in this field because everything has moved 3D. So we saw CMOS logic go into FinFETs, an inherently 3D device. NAND flash moved 3D with the 3D NAND flash structures. DRAM has kind of always been 3D, but it's getting tighter and smaller and more difficult. So with the move of all of these advanced technologies into 3D, the understanding of how the processes come together, where the problems are, where the defects are generated in these structures is incredibly complicated. Without predictive 3D modeling, Visualization, analysis, variation, you're never going to be able to develop these technologies on an even vaguely reasonable schedule. So I think process modeling has become super important in the development of these advanced 3D technologies. Where I see this moving now is into the manufacturing realm, where 3D modeling can be used for advanced process controls, real-time model-based process controls during the fabrication of these chips. I think that's the next stage of where process modeling starts to really expand in the manufacturing environment. You're already seeing model-based metrology in the fab. So things like OCD or scatterometry, those are based on a 3D physical model. So process modeling and 3D physical modeling is already making inroads into the fab itself, and I think advanced process control is a big next step.
All right, David, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know it's the beginning of sailing season, and that's something you really enjoy. So what do you love about being on the open water?
Well, first of all, I love being outside. Wind, sun, water, that's definitely the first piece of it. But as an engineer, I really like something that I can spend a lot of my concentration on. Sailing is inherently just physics. And so spend a lot of my concentration and really think very hard on something that's not work. And so sailing really provides me with both, you know, my love of the outdoors, but also my love of thinking really hard about physics when it's not related to work. So that's why I enjoy sailing.
I love that answer. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
I really appreciate it, and I look forward to future interviews. Thank you.
Keeping with our 3D big data filled theme this week, it's time for a little news you may have missed. MIT is at it again edition. So not only are we flipping the script on semiconductor architecture as we know it in this announcement, but also giving good old Moore's Law a little more steam to get on trucking down that technological track. What the heck am I talking about? So, researchers at Stanford University and MIT are working on a revolutionary new 3D prototype chip that combines data storage and computing in a single chip, with a little help from multiple nanotechnologies. Okay, so this new research project coming out of MIT and Stanford University has created a new 3D chip architecture, all from carbon nanotubes. Yep, no silicon business here. Which are actually sheets of 2D graphene formed into nanocylinders and are RRAM, or resistive random access memory cells. And get this. If creating a new, brand new, silicon-less, complete compute architecture wasn't enough, these researchers have also created the most complex nanoelectronic system ever made with emerging nanotechnologies. Because in this project, they have integrated over 2 million carbon nanotube field effect transistors, and over 1 million RRAM cells. So, how are these nanotube transistors and RRAM cells put together? Well, they are actually interleaved layers of logic and memory, and the RRAM and carbon nanotubes are built vertically over one another. With existing silicon-based technology, this kind of architecture isn't even in the cards. With traditional silicon transistors running temperatures over 1,000 degrees Celsius, building a second layer of silicon circuits on top of another? Forget about it. But these nanotube circuits and RRAM memory can be fabricated at much lower temperatures, below 200 degrees Celsius. Another incredibly cool part about this research is that this team from Stanford and MIT investigated the ability of these carbon nanotubes to also act as sensors. By placing a layer of 1 million carbon nanotube-based sensors on top of the chip, they can now detect and classify ambient gases as well. They are also looking at how this new compute architecture can be used in alternative learning-based computational paradigms, such as brain-inspired systems and deep neural nets. And finally, okay, one of the best parts, you see, because here on Fish Fry, we talk a lot about the technology of the future, research projects that really are only as good as the companies who decide to take a gamble on them. Well, in this case, one of those companies taking that well-placed gamble is Analog Devices. They are working on developing new versions of this system that take advantage of its ability to carry out sensing and data processing on the same chip. All right, so if you want any further information about this super cool new technology, of course, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Okay, pop quiz time. Diodes or multilayer varistors? Yeah, I thought so. Tricky question, right? We all know that choosing the right circuit protection is a very important design decision. Both diodes and multilayer varistors have advantages and disadvantages, and choosing the right one for your next application can be difficult, to say the least. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled Diodes or Multilayer Varistors, yeah, I get down to the bottom of all this once and for all. I sit down with Dean Beckley from AVX and talk about how to choose the best protection option for your next design. You'll want to check this one out, and you can do that by heading on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. You can also click the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, or you can also just head on over to the Chalk Talk section of eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EEJournal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can also grab our Fish Frying RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of July 14th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.